Oh, yes. We like to start with that one to let you know right up front that we are born again. This is Eddie Huff with my sidekick, Dave.
Reporting for duty.
And we've got Julian running the board. Hey, you know, Dave, I have to say something. That was Michael Tate with Newsboys. And, of course, Michael Tate is from DC Talk fame.
Yeah.
But this week, Toby Mac was in town.
Really?
Yeah, and this friend called me. I didn't even know he was here. And this friend sends me a text. Hey, do you want to go see Toby Mac tonight? I said, tonight? She said, yeah, I've got tickets, so I'll give you a ticket. So I said, yeah, sure, I'll go. And it was great. But here's what's interesting. It was just packed out. It was really? Really? Oh, yeah, it was really, really. It was at the BOK Center.
Wow.
And yeah, it was really nice, nice atmosphere, nice people, a bunch of just, you know, probably, I'm going to say maybe, I don't know, 8,000-9,000 Christian people. This would have, you know, like Donald Trump, it would have been 17,000-18,000 people.
In Trump math.
Yeah, if it were at the Mabee Center, it would be so packed, he would, of course, say it was 18,000. But I'm going to say it's probably 8,000 or 9,000.
Mabee Center, also known as the ORU Stadium.
Yeah, the ORU Stadium. So anyway, so I get there. I waited late. I didn't really care too much about seeing the warm-up acts. But they were good. Big Daddy Weave opened it up. And then Torrin Wells.
Huh.
And he's like the new it. He's
really?
Everywhere. Yeah. In fact, Babylon Bee did a spoof, you know, deal on him on how, how, you know, he somehow was able to record on somebody's part without them knowing about it, you
wow.
know, how did he, that one get away or something, or how did somebody record something without him on it, because he's always with somebody.
Oh, yeah.
It's secular and non-secular, big secular, he's,
really?
Like I said, oh, yeah, he's,
so
but I have to say, he's very, very talented. I mean, he was moonwalking, he was dancing, he can really sing. I think he is the rising star of Christian music.
So there's photobombing. But now here's album bombing.
Yeah, I mean, I guess. Yeah.
That's showing
just pops
up.
Yeah, shows up on these. But it's interesting because he was playing the guitar. I mean, it's like he did Michael Jackson with the moonwalk, then he did his Prince thing by playing the electric guitar and stuff.
Yeah.
But no, seriously, he was very good. Yeah. I was really impressed.
And Eddie, I have to say, that says one thing. Artist, you're not too good to treat the studio staff well, because that's what happens when you treat studio staff well.
Yeah.
You know, treat guys like Julian, right? And you never know what album you might show up on.
Yep, that's exactly right. So one day when Julian's a big time recording engineer for MGM or one of the big labels, ABC
he'll remember who gave him his start.
That's right.
It
all started in a little office on 57th Street in Tulsa, Oklahoma. But no, it was really good. Torrin Wells did great. In fact, I would say he kind of stole the show. Now, show wise, Toby's show was great. I mean, the beginning was the best part. I can't even describe, but it was awesome, the beginning, how they did that. But it was really good. I was really blessed to see so many young people, old people, everybody, black, white, you name them. But just to see Torrin Wells, for those who don't know who Torrin Wells is, by the way, he's a black Christian artist. But he's not, how would you say it? He's not a Joe Biden black person, okay? He'd be more of a, he's just black. He's just a person that happens to be black that's very talented. Let's just put it that way. And he's... If you're not watching our video, Dave just pointed at me. He pointed at me. But
guys who just happen to be black.
Yeah, just happen to be black. Yeah, just black by birth, you know, by accident, by happenstance, by God's sovereignty, thank goodness.
Yeah.
Hey, but no, I was really impressed. And so I've been ever since then. I think it was Wednesday night. But ever since then, I lay up like till 2 in the morning listening to Torrin Wells music.
Awesome.
There's a live. By the way, on YouTube, you can see his live performance and one of his concerts. And it's worth watching.
Yeah.
It really is. It's probably an hour and something. But it's really, really good. And of course, Toby Mac is good. This is his first time here since COVID and the loss of his son. I don't know if you know he had a son who overdosed. Died of an overdose, which was pretty sad. It's 2 years ago now.
Yeah.
And he was supposed to come last year, but wasn't able to.
I want to say something on that, Eddie, and I'm sure you can appreciate this with all your years of producing, you know, great concerts. There's talent and then there's showmanship. Toby has learned showmanship. Carmen's another, learned showmanship. You don't always have to be the most talented, but if you put on a good show, good entertainment, you know, that's what gives you lasting value.
And songwriting.
Oh, boy.
You write good songs. But, you know, it's very interesting because one of DC Talk's big hits, I can't think of the name of it to save my life right now. I had it, and now that I need to use it, I don't have it. But it was originally written by Charlie Peacock.
Oh, yeah.
And we did a tour with Charlie Peacock and Margaret Becker.
Mm-hmm.
And
incredible talent.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Charlie was one of the best live artists ever. And the show is great. But for some reason, like you said, people just never connected. They never connected with Charlie Peacock, who happens to be, to me, one of the greatest Christian artists ever out there as a pure artist.
Yeah.
But always known more as a songwriter than an artist. But his albums, you get a chance, go on YouTube and look up Charlie Peacock. Mm-hmm. But anyway, this one song, it's kind of a reggae song. Oh, I wish I could think of the name of it. Well, he did it. It never went anywhere. DC Talk did it. It went to number one. It was this big, one of their big, big hits. Yeah. So it's exactly what you're saying.
Yeah.
That people, for some reason, couldn't connect with Charlie's live performance like they could Toby Mac, even Margaret Becker.
Yeah.
Talent-wise, now Margaret Becker's phenomenal.
Yeah.
I mean, she should, to me, be one of, if not the greatest female Christian artists ever, just talent-wise.
Yeah.
But she never connected with people like others have, Amy Grant, Sandy Patty, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
But I know where you want to, I know where you want to go. Let me just say this. I'll just come out. Margaret has come out where she likes girls. I guess that'd be the way to say it. Okay. But I've toured with her, stayed in hotels with her, not in the same room, but in stayed.
You offered your daughter, right?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, you better explain that.
Oh, yeah. Before I knew that she tended to be a lesbian, I always wanted to be careful that when you have a female traveling with a bunch of guys, her whole band was guys, and then I'm traveling, and I want to be careful and so forth.
Sure.
So I didn't know, to save them expense and bringing somebody with to tour to be kind of her companion.
Right.
I offered my daughter, my 13-year-old daughter, to be her female companion.
Yeah.
I mean, even the sound of it now sounds crazy. But she said, no, it's okay. I've got someone. And she brought this other lady or girl with her.
Yeah.
And so I don't know, you know, it might turn out that it was one of her girl friends. Well,
we don't know. But I was going to be a little bit broader than that.
Okay.
Because I think of people like Charlie has come up, Russ Tapp, another.
Yeah.
You've got things off stage that are compromising you. You've got vices. And for Charlie and Russ Tapp, I think they both talked about alcoholism.
Mm-hmm.
And it has really been, you know, one of those things that you just, you know, when the scripture says be circumspect, that means keeping guard all around the perimeter of your life.
Right.
Because any little one thing you let in can impact everything.
Yeah, that's true. Now, I'm not sure about Charlie. I know Russ Taff has come out with alcohol, but there's so many things. I mean, by the way, let me tell you people, no way in my mind today did I expect us to be talking about this whole, the Christian music scene, okay? Yeah. I mean, it's a jump that just came up, but I think it's worthy to discuss.
It is.
And one of my peeves, I've toured with since the 70s.
Yeah.
Okay, early Maranatha groups. I saw Barry McGuire in Second Chapter of Acts in a room about this size, standing in the corner singing the Talbot Brothers. Mm. You name them, Bethlehem, Sweet, all the Maranatha bands.
Yeah.
because I was in El Paso, Texas, and El Paso was like the midpoint between there and the rest of the earth, you know, the rest of the world when you come from California East. So everybody went and stopped there, you know, Benny Hester. I remember Benny Hester comes in, big name, big time, and he's sleeping in my daughter's little bed. They were sleeping on floors, eating church food.
Yep.
But let me say this. I think as far as the Christian music industry, in fact, one of the reasons I became a missionary and decided not to pursue ministry was I actually got ticked off at the whole Christian music industry.
Yeah.
What was happening? I'm going to name some names. But at that time, Amy Grant was a younger artist, and her brother-in-law and his college buddy, Blanton and Harrell was the name of them. They started out working for the Gaithers, and she warmed up, and that was it. But these guys were geniuses, okay? I'll give them all the credit. Blanton and Harrell were geniuses.
Yeah.
And they knew how to market.
Yes,
they learned from Gaither, but they took it another step into the CCM or contemporary Christian music realm. Yeah. So they created this monster machine, Amy Grant, Michael W. Smith.
Oh, Brown Bannister.
Right. That whole cabal, I guess you would call them. And then you had other artists come up that, in my opinion, honestly, were much better. For example, Michael W. Smith. When I came from Europe, I worked with this company called Impact Production. They had a young Christian comedian, and he did a skit. They did a skit, which it was Big Bird, but it was Michael W. Big Bird.
Oh!
and his whole thing, he had this outfit on, Big Bird, and it was talking about how, you know, he's writes these great songs, and he's very popular, even though he sounds just like Big Bird. And it was like, and when you're listening, he really does. Oh. Michael W. Smith has never been a vocalist.
No, okay,
let's just put it that way.
Yeah,
he's a great songwriter.
He stays on key,
whichever key that may be. But I love his song. His songs are good. I'm not taking that away. But I've never been able to really get into him because I appreciate
performance,
good vocals.
Yeah,
well, even performance wise.
Yeah, but he's a great guy, great songwriter.
Right, great song. I mean, one of the best. Oh, yeah. Sure. Yeah. But these guys totally took what Maranatha Music had created, and they moved it all to Nashville.
Yes, they did.
Because at that time, everything was coming out of the West Coast, contemporary Christian music-wise, and all of a sudden, it shifted over. You know, you had the Talbot Brothers.
Yeah.
You had Leon Patillo. You had all of the Maranatha Music groups and so forth. And all of a sudden, here comes this little girl, Amy Grant, and then this Michael W. Smith, and all of a sudden, word picked that up.
It was Word versus Sparrow. You know, Sparrow was the
even
West
versus
Coast.
Maranatha Music.
Yes, yes.
Sparrow wasn't even around. And then, of course, Phil Kagi launched Sparrow Launch.
Okay.
And one of Phil's best friends, which we discussed when I was talking about a month ago to my friend. Man, I've got too many things going. It's like the fire hose going through a lawn hose, everything right now. Peter York was from Youngstown, Ohio, and Phil Kagi's from Youngstown, and they were good friends, and so he brought him to Sparrow. Peter ends up becoming AR director at Sparrow, and then Sparrow grew up. But everything moved to Nashville.
Yeah.
But when I think of certain artists, the talent level that never got really, you know, the props they should.
Yeah.
And the Christian music scene, I think personally in the late 90s, early 2000s, was horrible. It was basically Amy Grant, Michael W. Smith, and Stephen Curtis Chapman 24/7.
That's Sandy all. Caddy was another one.
Well, but Sandy was another whole deal. In fact, I think Sandy had already been kicked. That's another one. Yeah. Sandy gets a divorce, and all of a sudden she's this immoral woman or something. You know, they want to stone her. And Amy Grant, of course, you know, can do whatever she wants.
She's the girl next door.
Yeah, exactly. And then, for example, here's the one that really, the straw that broke the camel's back. And man, we better get on to some other stuff. Okay, Striper.
Yeah.
Okay. I happened to get to manage Striper's tour.
Yeah.
And they, honestly, this is no joke. I promise you this is all true. Striper was one of the most godly, family-loving, good-natured group mm-hmm. of band members I've ever, even their crew.
Yeah.
Their crew. And did I tell you a story about Amsterdam?
I don't think so.
Okay. They had signed with Hollywood Records, big secular mm-hmm. label. And so Hollywood Records, the division of RCA, decided they wanted to do something special for the band. They had just played at the Flavo, big Christian festival in Holland. Mm-hmm. And so they had just played Flavo, did a great job. Now, Michael Sweet didn't join them, the lead singer. So Oz Fox sang lead and played guitar. And it was amazing. I mean, seriously, amazing. And the sound that they could get as loud as they were, the clarity, the balance. I mean, their sound people and lighting people were just the most amazing. And they were just the nicest, most humble, quiet guys.
Yes.
But they did big shows. They did Julio Iglesias' father, the old suave guy. And they did Madonna and Cher and all these. Well, anyway, it was a professional crew. Okay, these were big time sound and light engineers. But anyway, just the nicest guys. But anyway, so they Hollywood Records decides to put us up in one of the nicest hotels in Amsterdam, and we're right on this place called Leidseplein, which is like Piccadilly Circus, but in Amsterdam.
Yep.
It's called Leidseplein. All these lights and big theaters and stuff. So Striper. We go into Amsterdam, and I get Michael Sweet's room, because he wasn't there. So they gave me his room. Mm-hmm. And they had these two girls, money honeys, I guess, that they said, hey, guys, these are Dutch girls. We have so many $1,000s to spend tonight to take you guys out. So first of all, where do you want to eat? Well, we don't care. You know, it was no big deal. Yeah. So they said, how about... Well, we just don't want to go too far. So they took us to this Indian restaurant, which was like right across the street. And we had Indian curry.
Oh.
Really good stuff. Yeah, it was pretty hot, but really good. Mm-hmm. So anyway, so then, okay, guys, the night's young. We've got this money. Where are we going now? Are we going to hit some bars? We're going to do this? No, I'm just going to go to my room. I need to call my wife. I need to check with my kids.
There you go.
So I thought... These guys are probably messing with me. They want to be sure, you know, once I'm gone.
Oh!
Yeah. You know, I mean, it's suspicious. You know, I'm believing all this stuff I'm hearing.
Yeah.
And so so the girls are waiting downstairs. And this was probably about 8 o'clock at night. We got through eating. And everybody goes to their room. So I said, I'm going to go downstairs and see what's going on. So I go down at about 10, 10:30.
Chaperone coming down the stairs.
Here's these two girls. Still sitting there by themselves with their heads in their hands. Like, these guys never showed up, you know, and finally they went on home.
Yeah.
But, no, like I said, and the U.S. tour manager who had been with a family friend, and he used to be the tour manager for Foreigner when Foreigner was the big time. So this guy was a pro, too. But we had a lot of time to talk. And so I say all this just to say that Striper... I believe was very much wronged by the Christian community, particularly the radio and record. I don't know if you remember, they pulled all their albums off the shelves and all this stuff, which was totally unnecessary. It was overboard. I don't know. I still don't. It just baffles me because I actually got to spend quality individual time with these, and these were solid, really good guys. Yeah. Now, the bass player, Timothy Gaines, he had some, you know, he was going through some stuff, and
yeah, I think that was the excuse used to pull their stuff.
Yeah, but it was nothing. Like I said, he was just totally gentleman, nice, quiet, really quiet guy. Mm-hmm. And the other stuff that was going on that I knew was going on that I saw with some of these other groups that I had been with.
Yeah.
That I won't talk about. But and I saw these groups, nobody talks about this or this and the stuff we know going on here and here.
Yeah.
And then they do this to them. You know, to Sandy Patty, to some of these other people, I just felt like there's something wrong. As they say, there's something rotten in Denmark, and there's something rotten in the music community. And I have many more stories. There's a whole lot of stuff that I won't go into, But I'll finish with this. Yeah. You remember Bill Gaither wrote a song called The Song? Do you remember the...
Yeah, that was kind of a gospel message.
Right. It talked about how the message, how it started, and then it got corrupted. Mm-hmm. But then God Gave the Song is the name of the song. Mm-hmm. The God Gave the Song. And then, right, it gets like this big orchestra. It becomes discordant and everything. You can't understand it. And nothing made sense. And then all of a sudden you hear this little... And just a little piano deal. And that saying that... And what he was talking about was the gospel message. The message of Jesus Christ has gotten so messed up. Mm-hmm. And back then it was actually probably at its peak doing well. Mm-hmm. But then sure enough... That message got lost in the music, lights, action, sound, you know. But as God told Elijah, there's always a remnant. You're not alone. You're not the only one. There are still good, gospel, God-loving, faithful men and women out there. And the message will always last. And I hope that's encouraging to you guys out there that... In the midst of all the turmoil, in the midst of all the mess we have right now in the United States of America and the world, frankly, that God is still in control.
Yep.
He is, and he will always be in control. So all we can do is rest. Doesn't mean we stop doing whatever we can to fight against injustice, to fight against the corruption of the gospel message, fight against the darkness. But we always have to do it from a point of view of trust. That we trust God, and it's in his power, not our power, that change is going to come. So with that, we're going to take a break. Julian, take us on a break. Thank you. Man, I didn't even have time to go out and get a drink before back. After all of that, I needed a drink.
Yeah.
No, I'm kidding. Seriously, we thank you guys so much for listening to us every Saturday afternoon. For us, it's Saturday afternoon. Yeah. For you, it might be any time. But, and I don't think also, Dave, I was thinking about a lot this week, just the blessing you have been to this program. Of course, Julian, by running the technical, the soundboard and all, but what you've done to make so much of this possible, to give us access to Facebook, YouTube, and just making it. And today, by the way, we have three cameras going, which is
one,
kind of
two, three.
Yes, yes. So you, and you. The fun part is good. You putting it together when I do.
All that means is more hours of post-production for me.
Exactly. And I thank you. And by the way, you know, you're laying up treasure.
Yeah,
you just always remember you're laying up treasure in heaven as you do this.
Yeah. I want to tell you a little bit of
please
story
go ahead.
About...
Back to the CCM.
Mm-hmm. I'm at this little Assembly God church called New Life Center. It used to be called Bethel Assembly.
Here in Tulsa.
Pastor Jim Holder, who used to be youth pastor out at Broken Arrow Assembly God, or the Assembly, it's now known as. But his son, Brandon, is middle school age. And one of the older kids in the youth, really he's kind of 19, should be moving on from youth. He comes to Wednesday night midweek service with the new Striper debut album, The Bumblebees, right? Because they wore the spandex.
Yellow and Black Attack was the name of Yellow and Black Attack. Yeah.
And he shows up and, this 19-year-old, Mitch is his name, And he's got the new album. And Brandon, this young, impressionable kid, the pastor's son, is looking at it in the foyer of the church. And the pastor comes up thinking, oh, my God. My kid, you know, because if you're like a youth pastor's kids, they grow up early because they get exposed to things ahead of their time, right? And so anyway, the pastor comes up, looks at it, and they're showing it to him. And I'm standing there, and the three or four of us are kind of waiting to see what is the pastor going to say. And he's trying to be careful. And he says, you know, I really have a problem with this. And Mitch says, what's the problem? And he said, they don't look Christian. To which I said, oh, what does a Christian look like? And he stops and he says, good point. Because that's the problem when you start defining the perimeters of what is acceptable wardrobe. Because they were modest. They were modest.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know. But, you know, this is showmanship. This is what gives lasting value. It's your whole presentation. It's your brand. The, you know, the yellow and black, that's part of branding. Mm-hmm. But this is the problem. Now, Brandon, his son, went on to be a tour drummer for Elton John and for Leon Russell. You know, so, you know, the kid did well.
Yeah.
And but this is the kind of thing that the church had a problem. One guy, I think it was it Jeff Fisher, used to write for CCM Magazine. And I think in the...
Jeff Fisher or John Fisher?
John Fisher, yeah. I'm sorry. And John, years later, said, CCM probably wasn't as much a move of God as it was a move of marketing, which goes to the Blanton Herald.
Right, thing. What I was talking about. Uh-huh.
And so this is kind of part of that problem, is the whole marketing... And for if you're a youth pastor of a local church and you feel like God has put you in a place of protecting these kids during impressionable years, and you've got all these artists coming in and you've got to filter it, that's a challenge. It really is.
Yeah, it is. And it's one of my, I guess peeves would be a good term, even today, that churches have forgotten again that the message is the message.
Yeah.
I think I talked about Marshall McLuhan's book, The Medium is the Massage.
Yeah, okay.
Did we talk about it a few weeks ago?
I think so.
And I think it's crept into the church as well that the medium is the massage, which is a play on message, where it has taken over what the message is.
Yeah.
And you can't rely on that. That's the world. Yeah. That's the world talking. With us as believers, the message is the message.
Yeah.
That's why I think the series The Chosen is so powerful and so popular now, because it's going back to very simple. This isn't a Hollywood glamorized Jesus and apostles.
Yeah.
It's just a bunch of guys walking around arguing and doing stuff. And Jesus, we watched it. I watched season 2, episode 2 last Sunday night. And it was funny. Or did we talk about this? I think it was, it was last Sunday night. So anyway, or maybe it was last week, where Jesus comes in. And, okay, the disciples are sitting around a fire, and they're just arguing and talking about this and this. And, you know, and they're just arguing. And all of a sudden, Jesus, they say, where's Jesus? You know, where's the Lord? He said, oh, he's over there. He's still preaching. He's still preaching to these people, you know, and they're saying, and then they go about their deal. So all of a sudden they're arguing and they're just like almost about to fight. And then all of a sudden here comes Jesus walking out and everybody gets quiet. And he just comes trampling by, just worn out, rode hard and put away wet. And he walks and says, good night, and goes in his tent and goes to sleep. And he's just worn. I mean, they could see that Jesus was just worn out after spending the entire to speaking to thousands of people while they're sitting around. You know, he's out there just giving everything to these people that want to hear it. And here they are sitting around the fire arguing about this and that.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, he doesn't even stop talking. He just goes into his tent. Good night. Yeah. He goes to bed. And they just end up just looking at each other, yeah. and that's how it ends. The conviction that he can do. I mean, that's what's so powerful, because it was so little that said so much,
mm-hmm.
right? Yeah. Just that little. I mean, the way he just walks past him, just walked, didn't even sit down, went food, nothing. He just walked straight to his tent, you know.
Yep.
And he's done.
Yeah.
So that's how it is. With, yeah. Just essentially with what it has to be. The yeah. message has to be that we're all fallen, we're all sin. Yeah. All of sin comes short of the glory of God, but God sent his son mm-hmm. to die on the cross for us, and you can't get any deeper, any more profound than that. That's mm-hmm. the end of the gospel message right there.
Yeah, and I want to say, for further reading, probably one of the greatest books on this point is C.S. Lewis' Mere Christianity. It just cuts out all the trappings, all the fluff, all the traditions and cultures and rites and rituals. Just put it down to you and Jesus.
Yeah.
Get to know each other.
Exactly.
That's all it
exactly.
is.
Exactly. And that's where we have to focus.
Yep.
Even the church I go to, you know, they're so into the music and the band. And,
yeah.
and I just can't wait till the preaching starts. You know, it's
yeah.
It's all funny because yeah. I'm a guy that comes out of the whole music thing,
yeah.
and I don't really need to hear music.
Yeah.
I need the message. Yeah. Is what I need. It's what I want.
Yeah. So,
and that's what.
And that's really what it comes down to. Yeah. And you know, we're human beings. Culture and tradition and rituals and ruts are just going to happen.
Right.
That's our nature. But we've got to take stock and clean out the cobwebs every so often, and just make it about me and Jesus.
Right.
That's it.
Right. Thank you, Lord. Cool. Thank you, Lord.
We didn't get to Babylon yet.
No, I know. I know. It's right. Going from Jesus to Babylon, right?
Yeah.
Right. The Babylon Bee. Yeah. There were a couple of items this week.
Yes.
I'm trying to decide which one I want to begin with. Well, I'll just start with this one. Well, yeah, we'll start with that. The Democrats had to clarify that men are allowed to have an opinion on abortion.
Oh.
As long as they're for it. In a press conference to protest the Texas abortion ban, Democrat leaders called on men across the nation to stand up for the right of women to kill their sons and daughters through all 9 months of pregnancy. Ooh, man. We've always said no uterus, no opinion, but we need to clarify that, said Nancy Pelosi. If you have no uterus, but you are pro-abortion, you're totally allowed to have an opinion. In fact, if you're a man and you're not loudly and forcefully in a very masculine way voicing your pro-choice opinion to everyone in support of abortion, you probably hate women.
Yep.
The nation's Democrat men were a little confused after having been told to shut up for the last 50 years, but were really thankful Democrat women were now allowing them to speak again.
Yeah.
So, if we say we're cool with killing babies, will you let us talk sometimes, said all the Democrat men. Yeah, that's okay now. We need your voice, said the Democrat women. There's so much truth in satire in there.
Yeah.
It's sad.
Yep. It brings me to a litmus test. A friend of mine and a good, clear thinker said, in political dialogue, when people are addressing their opponents or their political enemies, you know where to cut off their credibility is when they start ascribing attitudes to their adversary. Like, well, then you hate them, you know.
Right.
Or, you know, to call somebody a name, a Nazi, a racist, or whatever, instead of objectively saying, here's where you and I disagree. You're just throwing names at
them. Right.
You know, and that's laziness.
Yeah, that's so true, though.
Yeah.
That's one of the things, I think, Dave, that made me appreciate you back when we were arguing about Trump
yeah.
in 2016.
Yeah.
I won't rehash that again, but mm-hmm. we met as adversaries on Facebook
yeah.
where he was very opposed to Donald Trump.
Yes, I was.
And I was very much in support of him. But I wasn't as much in support as you were against. I would just like poking the bear. I enjoyed having fun with you.
He's good at it.
Yeah. But yeah, that's my, you know, I always tell people, what's your favorite thing? I said, I like Words with Friends.
Mm-hmm.
You know the Words with Friends?
Yeah, Scrabble.
Which is Scrabble.
Yeah.
Well, I have my own version of Words with Friends, mm-hmm. and that's Facebook
yeah.
dialogue and arguing. But But yeah, that was exactly, that's, as I said, that's why I would come at you, I would argue with you, I'd make fun of the things you were saying and all, but you never went there. You never called me this or that, or you're just this, or you're just that. You would come, you'd come up with a new argument.
Yeah, well, and where really made a change, I think made an impact, or I read it in your face, was you and I showed up downtown at the Defenders of Liberty Awards the next fall. And I came up and just, hey, Eddie, you know, and I'm talking and that. And you were kind of looking at me because I think you were a little bit defensive, like, okay, this is the guy that I've been ripping apart on social media. And he just wants to be my friend.
Yeah, you know? I think I was a little, apprehensive, you know. Is this, am I being set up? Is he ready to slap me or wait for me outside?
Well, to me, you're somebody who's impacting media generally. You know, you're an ally. And my thing was, in fact, that night, a kid that I had nominated got one of the Defenders of Liberty Awards, Alex, Alex Allen. And a young kid that wrote an incredible poem in his blog. And we were at the SRLC and, you know, Republican leadership with all the big names. And that, and everybody's like, is this guy going to be here tonight? I said, no, he can't. Tonight's his high school graduation. I said, a teenager wrote that? You know, and so I'm always about encouraging people who are in media.
Yeah.
And so that to me is like, how can I not be encouraging? In fact, I remember at one point you had stepped aside from the microphone at KFAQ. And I said, Eddie, you don't lose unless you quit. Keep going. Keep going. And you went back to your New Black Thought blog. And I'm just like, keep on, Eddie. You know, because we've got to understand we're allies. You know, we've been tearing each other. I hate going into next spring in our primary season because it becomes like the Trump versus Cruz. I hate that.
Yeah. It's funny you mention that because you remember in the 70s, the whole Christian movement, the group out of Florida, Christian Growth Ministries, Derek Prince, Bob Mumford, Charles Simpson, a bunch of, these are great. I mean, when I got saved, they were my Sunday school teachers on video. We had a little fellowship group, bunch of hippies. But Bob Mumford said something really interesting talking about, we sing the song Onward Christian Soldier, but we're the only army that when our wounded come back from battle, we finish them off. we don't comfort or heal their wound, bind their wounds. We finish them off.
Yeah.
And so that is true, that if somebody doesn't agree or somebody stumbles and falls, we're ready to attack and tear them apart instead of trying to understand and heal them spiritually. Yeah. Not we're not going to compromise. We're not going to say, oh, it's okay, you know, if you don't think God is against homosexuality or this and that. I'm never going to capitulate on that. If someone asks me, I say, no, God created a man and a woman, and the two shall be one, and they shall bear children, and da-da. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's why he did it, okay? Yeah. And God does not like homosexuality. I mean, otherwise, he would have created, you know, Adam and Adamo, or Adam Adam and Ben or something.
Adam and Steve.
Adam and Steve, yeah, there you go. And so, But he didn't, and there was a reason. So, but at the same time, I have clients, friends, people. My best friend growing up was gay. In fact, we were so close that my aunt and uncle were afraid I was gay, and they wouldn't say it. They were afraid. But every time, even in college, I'd come home, or visit them in Philadelphia, and this Rudy and I would go out and we'd go to movies, and my aunt and uncle, they were just freaked out. Sure. And I remember when I came home and I had this girlfriend, I showed him a picture of my girlfriend. It was like that. That's so funny. But anyway, here's the funny thing about that. Mm-hmm. We're chasing all kinds of rabbits today, by the way. But I think this is important stuff. I think it is. When I graduated from college, finished in May, from Texas Tech, June, 3 weeks later after graduation, I accepted the Lord.
Wow.
So I wrote my friend Rudy a letter. Said, hey, Rudy, I just got to let you know, man, God has changed my life. He's so good and he wants to do it, blah, blah, blah. that doesn't sound like blah, blah, blah. But anyway, mm-hmm. I was just kind of sharing my testimony out of the exuberance I had. Mm-hmm. Well, he wrote me back and said, well, yeah, well, I'm glad for you. I said, but he said, we can't be friends anymore.
Oh,
this is the gay guy telling me we can't be friends anymore. I said, what do you mean? You're my brother. I love you. We've been friends all our lives. Huh? And I'm not rejecting you. So, you know, I may not agree with your lifestyle, whatever, but you're still my friend, my brother, you know. And so he just said, no, I can't be your friend anymore because I'm gay. And then I never heard from him again. Yeah. That was the last time I ever heard from the guy. Yeah. So when you hear gays or people in that lifestyle attacking.
Yeah.
Calling us homophobes.
Yes.
It's more of a heterophobic.
Yeah, they're claiming homophobe. The victim card.
Right.
And they're not the victim.
No, they're actually the perpetrators.
Yes.
They're the ones who are attacking us and don't want to associate with us when we could care less.
Yeah.
You know, you do, what's the modern saying? You do you.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if you ask me, I'm going to tell you, you know, I don't like what you do or I don't agree with what you do. Mm-hmm. But I like you.
Yeah.
Or and you know, I'm praying for you and I still want to be your friend. I'm not your enemy. But at the same time, if you ask me, do I agree with it or do I want you to affect my children or other children? I'm going to say no.
Yeah.
And that's the position we need. And I honestly, that's the true biblical position that Jesus would take, as he did with harlots. Mm-hmm. Remember, he and drunkards and all of these people that he would accept.
Yeah, the woman
He didn't accept their lifestyle. Mm-hmm. He says, woman, go and sin no more.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
So any more than some guy that's, you know he's sleeping with other women or women that's doing the same, got five or six girls on the side, that type of thing, cheating.
Yeah.
You know, we don't agree with that. And so, but that's kind of how I think God would have us be, but it's been so turned around. Mm-hmm. It's like they're holding a mirror up and putting the things that they do and their attitudes.
They're projecting.
Projecting and accusing us of the thing that they're guilty of.
I want to say this is a truth, going back to what you said from Prince and Mumford and that about, you know, killing our wounded, finishing them off and that. Whose kingdom are you building? Because I'm going to say this has an application in the gospel, right? Because what happens is the carnal man wants to compete against his teammates. And it happens in politics too. You know, part of what I'm doing, when I finished running Rick Santorum's 2012 Oklahoma campaign, I was campaign coordinator. And I said, I'm going into media. You know, just citizen media, because we need conservative media. And then I started Sooner Politics, where I got, you know, dozens and dozens of conservative bloggers in Oklahoma together. And I'm about building them. That's why I reached out to you. I consider you so important in this. That's why we're here today, is, you know, to work together, because it's not our kingdom. It's not our agenda. Yes. So that's what I want to say is, I get, you know, there's cancel culture on the right. There's cancel culture in the church. part of what I'm facing with today is people are trying to cancel me right now because I won't cancel others that are in the Sooner Politics platform.
Hello.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, no, because now you're complaining about Facebook and Twitter. Hello, have you looked in the mirror? And this is, I'm talking Oklahoma political leaders right now in the Republican Party.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not naming names because you know who you are. But this is a problem. And we haven't even gone into primary season. I'm wondering how badly we're going to decimate ourselves come next spring and next summer.
Yeah.
This is a problem.
Yeah, we're going to damage each other. People should step, for example, okay, the gubernatorial race. Mm-hmm. Okay. Why would any Republican feel a need to step in and compete with Kevin Stitt?
I agree.
Why?
Yeah.
He's done a fantastic job. It reminds me, here's what it goes back to. When George W. Bush, I remember when he got elected, and I remember him saying this so clearly because it really stuck with me. He had people saying, okay, now we want you to end abortion. Mm-hmm. And he says, wait a minute. I'm the president of the United States, not the dictator of the United States, right?
Yeah.
He said, if you get Congress to send me the bill, I will sign it. I agree.
Yeah.
I would say, but he can't just do an edict like the Democrats are trying to do, like Joe Biden is doing.
Yep.
That's the difference in Republicans. So Kevin Stitt is truly, 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 now trust me when I say this, he is truly trying to manage the state of Oklahoma. Same with Kristi Noem. Mm-hmm. Kristi Noem.
Yep.
These are very smart people. South Dakota governor. They're very smart. If they don't do everything exactly like everybody on the right wants, all of a sudden, they're considered a rhino. I said, are you nuts? These people get it every day from both sides, and they don't need it.
Yeah. I want to say this right here. Now, Governor Stitt, please don't let this go to your head. I think from where I stand, this may be the best term of any governor in Oklahoma.
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree.
You know, and there's people running. Which kingdom are they building? Probably their own.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's all about
their
political
people have no chance. No chance. All they can do is damage a good governor and a good man.
Yeah.
I mean, I know this guy truly loves the Lord. Mm-hmm. He loves his family, mm-hmm. and he loves the state of Oklahoma.
Yes. Now, has he made mistakes? Yes. I believe there's things I think he's handled pandemic wrong, but I think the system corrected it. Whether it was my friend Frank Urbanek going with the lawsuit or the legislature stepping in and saying, no, this is how we handle it. Every 30 days, you got to come back here and get these emergency powers. You know, so we've got a system. We just need to work the system.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, but by and large, I say, you know, has he had missteps? Yes. This is the first time the guy's run for office.
Well, see, now I'm going back to my YWAM days.
Yeah.
You know, different but not wrong.
Yeah. There you go.
Different but not wrong. We have different opinions, but it doesn't mean we're wrong. Okay. Yeah. You and I are different, as we did on marijuana, right? Medical marijuana. Yeah. We, you know, COVID, we may differ a bit on it, but it doesn't mean you're wrong or I'm wrong.
Yeah. By the way, they filed 2 marijuana initiative petitions this week. And yes, I was asked to give feedback on the drafts and stuff. And there's 2 of them. They're vastly
different. Are they tightening? Are they starting to tighten or is it expanding it even more?
One of them is just about structuring Oklahoma City and the agencies so it runs better. Get it out of the health department, move it over more to like ABLE and that. The other one is about expanding it.
Expanding. Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah.
That ought to make you happy.
Well, no, I'm a teetotaler. It won't affect my life.
I'm messing with you, but yeah, it's true. Hey, but we better take a break. Julian's having conniptions over there at the board. So, hey, we'll be right back. You're listening to Fresh Black Coffee on lots of networks. All right, everybody. Dave, let me do another little Babylon Bee thing for us. Joe Biden invites Brandon to the White House to congratulate him on his success. Joe Biden says, wow, this Brandon character must be quite a fella. After listening to another raucous chant, for him to get crowds from all across the divided country to all be united together with such passion, I just can't believe that many people could all feel so strongly about one single man. We need a lot more Brandons in our country. I'll tell you that right now. Let's go, Brandon. Let's go, Brandon.
Let's go, Brandon. If you're a NASCAR fan, avid NASCAR fan, you are ahead of everybody else here. Because it was after a race, the young NASCAR driver, Brandon, I forget his last name, and sure enough, their interview, NBC.
NBC was interviewing him.
And what do the people do? They see this is live. The engines are shut down. You know, normally NASCAR, it's so loud there, right? And all of a sudden, there's nothing but an interview. And so what do the people do? The NASCAR fans, they start the F Joe Biden. You know, I'm going to give you the censored version. And trying to stay with it, this woman says, listen, they're saying, let's go, Brandon. No, it's F Joe Biden. And which happened to Biden at the congressional baseball game earlier last week, where Biden was there while they were all yelling F Joe Biden. And so,
they were saying, let's go, Brandon. at the congressional baseball game.
Yes, Babylon Bee said it, so it must be true.
Exactly. He was so impressed with the national unity he was witnessing, he asked his aides to record every single instance of crowds cheering, let's go, Brandon, so he could listen to them all in a row.
Yeah.
The president has apparently taken to showing the clips of two lawmakers to start off meetings in hopes of helping each side find a slice of common ground that they can really agree on. So from now on, if you hear, let's go, Brandon, you'll know what the people are really trying to say.
It even happened at the O'Hare Field, the big international airport in Chicago. Mm-hmm. Somebody went up to the public address saying, I need to find somebody. Could you page them? And went through all of O'Hare's, all their concourses, right? And all the terminus says, would let's go, Brandon, please come to Terminal B.
Terminal B.
So
if let's go, Brandon.
There's somebody named Let's Go, Brandon.
Let's go, Brandon. Oh my goodness. One last Babylon B, then we'll continue on with our little stuff today. In a controversial new Netflix special, Dave Chappelle just reads from a biology textbook. Here's the story. Comedian Dave Chappelle, he did the unthinkable.
He was
pushing the boundary of comedy further than they've ever been pushed before.
Oh.
Chappelle calmly got up at the beginning of the show to cheers from the crowd, and he quietly opened a fourth grade biology textbook and began to read.
That sounds like an Andy Kaufman move.
The X and Y chromosomes, also known as sex chromosomes, determine the biological sex of an individual, he read. Yeah. Boo, shouted someone in the crowd. That's way too far.
Yeah.
The fearless comedian pressed on. Females inherit an X chromosome from the father and receive the XX genotype. Males inherit a Y chromosome and thus have a XY genotype. Screams erupted from the auditorium. Cats shrieked. People ran, trampling over each other. I didn't mean to offend you, Chappelle called out. Please remain seated, ladies and gentlemen. Everyone instantly dropped dead. For those that don't know, Dave Chappelle, as so many comedians now, they've just had it. They're just coming out. And Dave Chappelle, basically, he's calling out this idiocy of trying to say there's no such thing as gender. Mm-hmm. That there's transgender or there's cisgender and that gender and...
Yes, your reality is whatever you
believe. Cisgender and that gender.
Yes.
Like this and that. Yeah. It's like Germans have come in and taken over, you know. Look at this. Look at that. But no, Dave Chappelle, basically, this is a spoof. He didn't actually read from a book. But he did point out that this is crazy that men are men, women are women.
Absolutely.
And we don't need to. And he's going to call men, men, and women, women. And of course, he did get boos. They booed him. He got off, walked off stage, but he came back. And he sat there for like 30 minutes reading a book. Whether it was a biology book or not, I don't know. But between him, Joe Rogan, others now are stepping up. They're starting to get more and more bold because they're tired of this.
Absolutely.
It's, you know, honestly, it's my show. Okay, it's my show. And, you know, and as you know, Sue Brandon.
Yeah. Jerry Seinfeld had said that, you know, one of the greatest comedians of the last generation, you know, said, I'm done with playing colleges. Any university campus. Yeah. These are places supposed to have the most enlightened, the most knowledgeable, the most informed on the sciences. And they're science deniers.
Right.
You know, I mean, I even look at how it's impacted state agencies in Oklahoma. During the COVID, you know, the State Department of Health, instead of breaking down the deaths and breaking down the infections by sex, they broke it down by gender. How do you feel? Do you feel more feminine today or do you feel more masculine? Man. And the more masculine you felt, the more likely you were to die from COVID. According to their statistics, people of a masculine gender that identify as men have a 35% higher death rate than women. But they still won't tell us the breakdown by sex.
Yeah.
And this is a disservice to the people of Oklahoma.
Of course it is. Of course it
because
is.
Because this is where we need to know the actual biology. Are men more endangered biologically?
Hello?
Not age, sociologically.
Age, race, sex, we need to know.
Yeah, now they won't let you make up your own reality about age, but they do about your sex.
Right.
And then they just call it gender, and we refuse to acknowledge people's sex.
It's like me. I'm only 17 years old.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I'm just trapped in this old body, and I keep trying to get out, but I can't seem to manage.
Yes.
Excuse me. But, hey, I wanted to transition from here.
Yeah.
The reason I'm doing it, I thought of something. I went to a Bill Cosby show 10 years ago at the Cherokee Casino
Theater. Didn't we cancel Bill?
Not then, they didn't.
Okay.
And it was a packed house. It was pretty funny. It was really, I mean, he's really good. He really
is. But he's another one of those that has no room for nonsense on political
crime. Well, yeah. And see, the reason they went after him for a 40-year-old foible, I guess you would say.
Yeah.
I think we talked about this before, how that whole crew, the second Rat Pack, you know, the Rat Pack Jr., him and Robert Vaughn and what's his name, Napoleon Solo, and so many of those guys that were in the big stars, more TV stars than movie stars and singers of the late 60s. This was actually in the 60s, because you remember the original Rat Pack was like the 50s and early
60s. That's true. Dean Martin.
Yeah, Perry Como.
Yeah, this, Paul Anka, I think, was in
there. Right, Joey Bishop.
Joey Bishop, that's what it is.
And Sammy Davis Jr., just so we could have a token Negro in the group.
No,
so,
you heard he's called
it
token.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, you had this second Rat Pack, and these guys, their hang wasn't Vegas. Their hang was like the L.A. Playboy Club.
Okay.
And all of my, there was a special I saw one time on the anniversary of Hugh Hefner and the Playboy Club or something. Yeah. And or maybe it was 60 minutes. I don't remember. But anyway, they talked to these guys, and not Bill Cosby. They're talking to the others, and they were all talking about these wonderful, glorious memories they have of being at the Playboy Club and in the grotto and all of the shenanigans and goings on.
Yeah.
And so none of those guys got busted or anything. And Bill Cosby was doing well. Mm-hmm. He was doing well. But the force field was removed from him.
Yeah.
When he spoke out at the NAACP conference saying that black people were responsible for their own ills because they did not value education. They had lost their moral compass. They had.
Yeah.
So when he started calling out the moral compass of the black community,
they
couldn't have that. The liberal, and it wasn't necessarily the black community. It was the liberal establishment and liberal black
Politicians,
comedians, and pundits, especially the people in the media, they're just ridiculous. The news media, they all went after Bill with. And I said, even back then, this was in like early or mid 2000 or 2010, I said, oh, Bill's in trouble now. They're coming after him. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, they didn't quit. And they found these women, just like they did against Herman Cain. You remember they found two women to make up stories. And as soon as Herman drops out, what happened? They disappear. They're gone.
That's right.
All of a sudden, they're gone. And that's so now they had to go after and essentially crucify Bill Cosby. I'm not saying that it was morally right or anything like that. But why do you wait 20 years, 30, 40 years, whatever, to all of a sudden come out, oh, yeah, he did this, this, and this. Well, first of all, my question is, what were you thinking when somebody invites you to a hotel room in Las Vegas at midnight for an interview? Serious? You know, I've seen enough movies to know that I'm not going to anybody's hotel room at midnight on, you know, in Las Vegas. So, but anyway, having said that, so that was the cancel culture going after Bill Cosby.
Yeah.
But he did, he was at the casino and he started telling a story about Native Americans. And in the middle of it, a Native American, a drunk Native American woman got up and starts yelling and cussing him out and yelling because she was offended. And they finally had to drag her out of there because she was so upset. But I think there were a few, basically what Bill did to offend, he was telling this story about how the settlers were going across the country out into the West. And so these people had never driven covered wagons. They didn't know what to do in case of Indian attack or so forth. So he had them, you know, they had practice. Like a guy would say, all right, let's go. Forward, ho. And they go, tum, tum, tum. And then somebody else, Indians. And then they scramble to run a circle. And there's a guy on a hill with a stopwatch. Okay, I'm sorry, people. That took us 90 seconds. That was 30 seconds too long. And he goes to his home. And so let's do it again. So they go practice. No, here we go. Indians. And so he's telling all this at the Cherokee Casino, right?
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so fine. Then he does this whole thing about here come the, when they go out and hear somebody yells Indian, and here come the, Indians attacking, and they made their circles. And he does this thing about Indians riding bareback with their loincloths on top of these horses, trying to string a bow with an arrow while they're riding. And he's doing all this sitting in a chair, you know, with the arrow going all kinds of ways. And he said, they got it all wrong. He said, here's what should have happened. You know, they're attacking, and when they get about 100 yards from the settlers behind the thing, they stop, jump off their horses, and put a slot machine down.
And he said this at the casino.
At the casino. And all of a sudden, man, I tell you, all of a sudden, there were a whole lot of unhappy people there. And then he said, okay, I got to get you people out of here. And they said, no, no. He said, oh, no, you don't know these people. I better get you out there gambling here, or they're going to drag me out of here. Oh, my goodness. The guy was just bold.
Yeah.
And I think his boldness got to him. He told some good stuff. But anyway, here's the reason I bring that up. We were in Montana back in July.
Yeah.
And we drove back, and we drove through what was used to be called Indian country.
Yep.
The northern part. Sioux, the Sioux Nation.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, big.
And while we were doing, my wife decides she's going to go and read about the Indians in that country, and she came on the Sioux, and this special a tribe of the Sioux called the Lakota.
Sure, yeah.
Okay. Lakota, yeah. And what did I think what led us to that was she started reading about, because we drove by the Custer Little Bighorn.
Yeah.
And so she decided to, and then we saw the Crazy Horse Monument. So we decided to read about Crazy Horse.
Yeah. Now, this is the Black Hills area.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. Because we were going to Rushmore. We were coming from the northwest over to Rushmore. And so we drove right through the Black Hills and the whole Lakota country. And, man, I'll tell you, Dave, and I want you to do this at home. Seriously, a little history study. Get your kids to study this. It gave me a whole new view of what happened with the Indians. Mm-hmm. It made me much more, I guess, agreeable to what their arguments are and what really happened. We've kind of pushed that aside because black people are the big, I mean, they're the most abused victim ever on earth. Yeah. You know, nobody else has ever been abused like black folks have, even though we had a black president, all these millionaires and athletes and, you know, 70% of the NFL millionaires, are, they're all black. But they're oppressed.
Oh, yeah, that's...
But no, so we start reading about Crazy Horse, and man, it's sad. I mean, what happened? Why? What happened to Lakota? All the other Sioux had agreed to the terms of the treaty, which basically you show up and we're going to put you on a reservation.
Yep.
And Crazy Horse said, nah, I'm not going on a reservation. We're a nomadic tribe. Used to follow the hunting grounds wherever it was, to the west, to the north, to side in the winter. They'd go south and
follow the buffalo.
Follow buffalo. And so
bison.
And so they basically tried more and more oppressive means to get the Lakota under control. What does that remind you of? Non-vaxxed.
That's right. It's incrementalism, isn't it?
Yeah. It's the same thing. We are the Lakota.
Yeah.
And I may get a t-shirt made of that. We are the Lakota.
Yeah.
Long live Crazy Horse.
Yeah. Yeah.
I am Crazy Horse. I mean, I could, you know, because Crazy Horse, all he wanted to do was remain free.
That's right.
This is what we do. That's we hunt buffalo and we follow them around. But no, there's gold in them, our hills. So because of the gold, the miners wanted all the land.
Yep.
And so they wanted to turn that into basically government land and then sell it to settlers.
Yeah.
The gold people, the money people, which in today's terms would be called the pharmaceutical industry.
Yeah, there you go. You stepped in it, didn't you?
Yeah, I had to do it. The pharmaceutical industry. And we are the Lakota, those who are opposed to the mask mandates, vaccination mandates, and those who want to live free, the old New Hampshire live free and or live free or die.
Yep.
Those of us who really believe in liberty, who believe the promise of the Declaration of Independence, the promise of the Constitution of the United States, we are the spirit of Crazy Horse, the spirit of the Lakota. So all I've got to say is long live the spirit of the Lakota.
Yeah.
Long live the spirit of Crazy Horse. He is my new hero.
Yeah. What they're trying to take away incrementally is your autonomy. Now, let's take this to, you know, the American Indian tribes. I don't call them Native Americans because, again, what does Native American mean? Means you were born in the Americas.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, my kids went and did missionary work in South America and said, well, we're Americans. They said, that's funny because we are too.
Yeah.
It's South America is part of America.
We're South Americans.
Yes. So what I want to say, take the Choctaw tribe that moved over here. The deal they made with Andrew Jackson was, okay, if you want your autonomy, you got to go to Oklahoma, or Indian Territory, it was called. And Greenwood LaFleur, the principal chief of the Choctaws.
Slave owner.
Right. He decided, you know what, I'm going to give up my leadership of the Choctaws because I've got a big plantation,
yeah, 100
slaves,
yeah,
and I'm a member of the state senate, and my best buddy here, Jefferson Davis, is head of it, and he became head of the Confederacy.
Yeah.
And so the funny thing in Oklahoma is the only slavery that ever happened in Oklahoma didn't happen under American government. It happened under Indian government.
Right.
Even after the Civil War was ended, slavery continued in Oklahoma for a couple more years.
Unofficially, right.
No, it was until the tribes signed a new reconstruction.
Well, they signed the same deal as everybody else did, that 40 acres and a mule, or you make them members of your tribe.
Yeah, there was each one was a little bit different because each tribe autonomously did their own treaty.
Right, exactly. And that was the whole, with the freedmen, the Cherokee decide they're going to make them members of the tribe.
Right.
The Chickasaw They decided to give him their 40 acres and a mule. Yep. That's how J.C., not J.C., what's his name?
T.W. Shannon
was a Chickasaw.
Yep.
His parents were the Chickasaw slaves, and they got their land out west in western Oklahoma.
Yeah.
So they didn't have that issue.
Right. Now, I asked T.W., he told me, he says he actually, his ancestry is both Indian and freedman. Right. That's him.
So we had mixed marriage among the tribes.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And there's
I'm joking,
so much
people. This is just a joke.
Because if you had a slave, that was the, you know, when the wife was whatever, not interested, sometimes the slave owner found another woman. He owned her anyway. Mm. And now, is that biblical? Look up concubine in the King James language, okay? So, I'm sorry, I'm getting off on rabbit trail. But what I'm
We got to have limits. You know, 300 is a little, 700 is way over the line.
Yeah. But you know. So what I'm saying in all this is it was their autonomy that they were fighting for.
No, exactly.
Because, you know, just like in, you know, Greenwood, Florida wasn't any different than anyone else. You want to be an American, you want to live under American law, you can stay here.
Right.
If you want your tribal autonomy, you have to go there. That's where the reservation, they kept squeezing them in. And that's the liberty.
You know what's so funny, though? Here's the real funny thing is, remember the big thing with the Brady District?
Oh, yeah.
They had to change the name of the Brady District after another Brady who had nothing to do with it, but it's still Brady.
Yeah.
It was stupid. And so they did change that, but did they change Greenwood? Greenwood is still known and it's named after Greenwood LaFleur.
Yes.
The slave owner, who was a slave owner.
Yeah.
And the black people are so proud of the Greenwood district, but they're not, but they got to change the neighboring district, Brady district. I mean, it just shows the insanity and the mind games that have been played on the black community.
Outrage is nothing but a strategic tool for political gain. They chose to be outraged over Brady. They choose not to be outraged over Greenwood.
Right.
And that's the deal, folks. Do not fall victim to somebody's outrage because they're playing you. Now, there is real victimhood, but we've got to know the difference, and we've got to be consistent.
And everyone has been a victim.
Yeah.
Every nation on earth has been enslaved, or every group of people, and owned slaves.
Yep.
The Asians,
yeah.
You take the Japanese, Chinese, and Koreans and the atrocities committed between and among them towards each other.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Yeah. Unbelievable. Africa. Mm-hmm. Shaka Zulu, who's this great black hero. Everybody wants to name their strong, masculine, black young man Shaka. Excuse me. I'm losing my voice on that. But anyway, Shaka killed hundreds of thousands of his fellow Africans on his way to South Africa until finally the Zulu were stopped by the Afrikaner.
Yeah.
So, you know, everybody has, it's selective outrage. It is. We get back down to.
Yeah.
That's why, the single unifying entity on earth has been Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Amen.
More so than others, because Hindus, if you're not a Hindu, off with your head.
Yeah.
Muslims, if you're not a Muslim, off with your head. Christians are the only ones who have said, if you're not a Christian, it's okay. We're going to be Christians. If you want to join us, because it's not about this life. It's about the eternal life.
There it is. And I want to say this because my kids ask me, Dad, is mixed marriage wrong? And I said, yeah, it is. And they said, and I said, now you got to listen to me. And I pulled up Peter's epistle where he said, you, the church, is a holy nation, a set apart people, okay? Royal priesthood. Mixed marriage is when a Christian marries a non-Christian.
Yeah. Unequally That's, yoked. Be yes, not unequally yoked.
Right. In Corinthians, Paul talks about that. And so the marriage that I, as your father, I said to my kids, would have a problem with is if you married a non-Christian. As long as you marry a Christian, you being a Christian by your own testimony, you know, that's your command. And, you know, my daughter's married to a black man. You know about that. And
But is he really black? By what definition is he black?
Ah, bingo. And my kids didn't believe me. I'll be real quick with this.
They didn't believe he was black?
No. What? Listen, you got to tell. I tell all about my family history and heritage. And finally, my kids say, yeah, we don't know if dad's telling the truth. So one Christmas, they give me that DNA test that Ancestry.com does. And you know what? What do you know? Dad wasn't lying. You know? And then... my daughter says to her husband, Khalil, tell me about your heritage. And you know what? He said, I really don't know.
Yeah.
I don't. So she gets him the ancestry deal. Now, my daughter is 18% Belgian tribe. Okay. Khalil is 18%, actually 20% of the Belgian tribal heritage. He's more Belgian than she is.
Julian's mother took the test.
Uh-huh.
She's 5% sub-Saharan African.
Ooh.
Which would mean Julian is at least 2.5%.
Is he a brother?
More. Yeah, he's a brother. Pamoja yeah. There, Harambe. it's a crazy thing. I mean, once you go down that road, it's, in fact, when I was in seminary, and Julian's giving me the signal, we mm-hmm. got to wrap up, but I had a seminary professor, and he had been a missionary, and he said the only truly pure tribe or group of people that still are, he said, were the Koreans.
Hmm.
Or they're as close to it as any.
Okay.
Because even the Japanese have been infiltrated with Korean and Chinese. And mm-hmm. But he said Koreans tend to be the most pure.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I'm going to finish with this. Here's an interesting thing that really got me. Mm-hmm. Do you remember when, what is the name of the school? Real conservative school in South Carolina.
Citadel?
No. They were trying to make it was named after a person.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, man.
Oh, Bob Jones?
Bob Jones University.
Yes.
They made a big deal out of this racist university.
Yeah, he didn't allow mixed dating.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, exactly. And it was a big racist deal, right?
Yeah.
Do you know what that mixed dating rule was about?
What was it?
This is crazy. In the 50s,
yeah,
a Japanese family sent their daughter.
Mm.
She fell in love with a white guy.
Mm-hmm.
Japanese. The Japanese family raised mm-hmm. sand. They raised cane. They complained.
Yeah.
And the Japanese family, apparently pretty affluent, made them make the rule mm-hmm. that you're not allowed to date outside of your race.
Yeah.
So can you believe that? That was lost in the whole deal.
Yeah.
Instantly you say, oh, they're against mixed dating, mixed marriage, whatever.
Yeah.
It was instantly assumed it was black white.
Yeah.
But black white had nothing to do with it because they didn't even have any black students. And what it was a Japanese family that objected to their Japanese daughter dating a Caucasian.
Yeah.
Man, it's amazing when you really look at history, people, when you look at history, how it's been twisted to certain groups. Advantage.
Yeah.
And that's got to stop.
That's why we need conservative media. We need citizen journalism. I believe in citizen free press, just like I believe in a citizen's right to Second Amendment, to keep and bear arms. You need a police force, but you also need your own right to carry your own gun, right? Or arms, period. You need a good journalism, professional commercial media, but you also need citizen media, citizen journalism, free speech.
Yeah. No, I mean, man, we could go on. We could add another hour on this one today, but it's all right. It's all right, Jude. Jude is going to a homecoming dance tonight.
Oh.
Yeah, he's got a homecoming dance. He's got
the moves.
Yeah, he got his haircut this morning. I got to pay him some money so he can buy something, take his girlfriend out, his date. Those were the days, huh? Did you go to your homecoming dance, or did you go to a prom or anything?
Prom.
I never did.
Senior prom, yeah.
I never did.
I did. And then the next year, I became the date of a gal who was a year younger than me at her senior prom. And,
In college already?
Yeah.
I see.
I was just a good catch, you know.
So, I guess.
Yeah,
so. I must not have been. I ran too far, too fast.
But
I was
funny
picky, too. I was real picky.
I had a kid sister in those days, 4 years younger than me and that, you know. And then finally, about 2 years later, she says, you know, I really like you. And I'm like, ooh, this is good. So that's why I ended up married.
Wait a minute. Who said they really like you?
When I was 18,
right.
I met a gal who was 14.
Okay, just age of your sister.
Yeah. And she was.
Is she your wife now?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay, yeah. Now I got you.
See, and that was the 18 and 14. Yeah, you don't do, you know, that. Even
no, not then.
People, right.
Now
yeah.
It's nothing. I mean, now that you're.
But when I'm 21 and she's 17, yeah, now all of a sudden, okay. And yeah.
Well, I think I told you a story about my friend, right, in Colorado, who he was 12 years older.
Oh.
And he always joked, he used to tell his friends, he was a senior in high school, and these guys would want him to go out and do something. He'd say, oh, that's right, I got to go to the kindergarten and pick up my girl. I mean, when you think of it in those terms, it seems a little crazy, but it's funny how stuff changes. Hey, listen, we've got to wrap up. Hey, thank you, everybody, so much.
Yeah.
God bless you. Be sure to look us up. Call us. Email at freshblackcoffee@gmail.com, freshblackcoffee@gmail.com. Mm-hmm. And we'll see you next week.
All right.